seriously want.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
I'm your mama, I'm your daddy, I'm that I'm your doctor when in need. Want some coke, have some weed. You know me, I'm your friend, your main boy, thick and thin. I'm your pusher man.
7 minutes after the hour of five, my namesake, Curtis Mayfield, singing the theme song of Superfly TNT, that black exploitation movie of the 1970s, where you get three of those flicks for $5 on the deuce, 42nd Street, before they turn it into Disneyland. A.K.A. Disney World. But we're high atop Madison Square Garden and the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you, as many of you are reconnecting with what has gone on throughout the world while you were working your 9 to 5, whether it's a terrestrial radio, whether it's an app, whether you're going to catch us later on in podcasts and you're just sort of snacking on us, or you got the streaming audio on your laptop or your work computer. It's good that you've reconnected, because there was a lot going on today. A lot going on in terms of the opioid addiction rate that has caused the white population, I would say of those 45 to 65, to be depleted, a male population. So people are dying earlier as a result of this in many parts of the country. And many more white guys, particularly in county lockups and state jails, doing time because of their use and distribution of various opioids, particularly oxycodone, hillbilly heroin, than ever before. And the number of blacks incarcerated has gone down because they're not as involved in the opioid trafficking. But Jeff Sessions, our attorney general, weighed in on this today. And right before we're going to play you the cuts of what he had to say as part of the Trump administration's crackdown on opioid abuse, we gotta play what Michael Savage said a few days ago, because he came up with a solution to the growing opioid epidemic in our country that might rock your world. He's calling for a dictator.
It makes you really think very hard about a nation in crisis like ours with an opioid crisis. What must really be done can only be done in a dictatorship. But that's what must be done to stop it. Otherwise, this is never going to stop.
Hold on a second. Dictatorship. Whoa. What do you mean? Like President who? What's on first? Who's on second? I don't know who's on third. And Red China, who has now anointed himself a totalitarian dictator for all time? For all time? No, I don't think so, Michael Savage. In fact, let's go to the Attorney General of the United States, who earlier in the day talked about how there were 64,000 deaths in 2016 because of opioid abuse, and how it's gotten worse in terms of the stats in 2017.
In 2016, an estimated 64,000 Americans lost their lives to drug overdoses. That is the highest ever recorded in our history, actually nothing close to it. Except the previous year when it was 52,000. That was by far the highest we'd ever seen before. And it follows records over several years. Preliminary data suggests that 2017 was worse.
And he went on to cite those stats, the analytics. And then he came up with an acronym that I don't even think he understood. Listen to the Attorney General describe it.
We are attacking this crisis at its root, the diversion and overprescription of opioid painkillers. Today, I'm announcing the Prescription Interdiction and Litigation Unit, PIL, as we call it, Task Force. The PIL Task Force will focus in particular on targeting opioid manufacturers and distributors who have contributed to this epidemic.
Now, I've oftentimes used that term. You're a real pill. Justin B. Love, you interloper, you invader, hipster from Alabama, you're a real pill. Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, is a real pill. Michael Savage is a real pill. But I don't think that's what Jeff Sessions was talking about. And then he said this is a priority in the Trump administration.
President Trump has made ending this crisis a priority for his administration, and he has taken action from the beginning of his administration. Under his strong leadership, the Department of Justice has taken historic new actions to reverse the rising tide of addiction and death.
On the line to discuss this, Jeff Sessions' new task force targeting opioid manufacturers, distributors, and users is Dr. Jeff Reynolds, President and Chief Executive Officer of Family and Children's Association. Thanks for joining us on the Drive Home at 5 again, Dr. Jeff.
Always a pleasure, Kurt. It seems like we're talking a lot about opioids these days.
As we should. Yep. Now, this press conference earlier today to announce this task force, up until this point, what kind of a grade would you give the Trump administration in terms of dealing with this American crisis?
Well, look, the president said all the right things on the campaign trail. He occasionally makes speeches in which he says all the right things. But when it comes down to proposing budgets, the president has proposed cuts in every federal agency that's designed to deal with this crisis. So for me, it would be a resounding F, because the walk doesn't match the talk. You know, we're not seeing it. We're seeing a lot of words, a lot of sympathy, a lot of hugs for moms who have lost their sons and daughters. But we're seeing cuts leveled at federal agencies like the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, the CDC. You know, even on the law enforcement side, the president has proposed folding away the high-intensity drug trafficking area program, which is really what provides the bulk of dollars for municipalities like New York City and Long Island that are really in the heart of this crisis. So, you know, happy to hear Jeff Sessions talking about this, not so happy to see another task force. And look, I think there's plenty of room to discuss how the manufacturers, how the distributors are going to help us clean up this mess. But as they're putting together task forces, young people are dying left and right. The death toll continues to mount.
We see on almost a regular basis now where the authorities have seized sizable amounts of fentanyl, whether it's come in the belly of ships coming into port from Red China, or it's being brought across the border from Mexico into the United States, or it's found to have been deposited in warehouse facilities already here in the United States. What should the president and Jeff Sessions be doing about that? Because I don't think we can necessarily blame a Purdue or a Pfizer or any other pharmaceutical company for manufacturing that.
Yeah, look, I think the two actually go hand in hand, but law enforcement has been critical to this fight. Look, it used to be that folks like me that worked in the treatment space said, you know, we spend too much on law enforcement and we need to spend all the money on treatment. I think, you know, law enforcement recognizes the value of treatment. We recognize the value of law enforcement. We recognize that if we're going to address this problem, we have to address both the supply and demand. You know, what good is it for us to put folks into treatment if they walk out the door with and there's a line of dealers outside trying to peddle them fentanyl? And so I'm always frustrated when I hear about these seizures, because I feel like we've got the best technology in the world at this place and time, yet there's no shortage of fentanyl and heroin on the streets. Any drug user will say it's easier to get heroin than it is to buy beer in the 7-Eleven. That's crazy.
Would it make sense just to legalize these drugs, make sure that the junkies had a safe and clean place to inject and use it, and just accept that that they've chosen that as a way of life?
Yeah, look, there's a whole group of individuals that feel like that's the way we should go. I'll tell you, I'm not there yet. I think there is a role for harm reduction. And in fact, last week, this time, I was in Montreal visiting one of those supervised injection facilities. And I think for some users that are never going to get treatment, that continue to do harm to their health, there is a role and a place for some of those things. But it also feels a little bit like giving up. And so legalization to me feels like giving up, just saying, hey, we'll give you the needles and hope you don't drop dead of an overdose at the same time you're reinforcing the disease. To me, feels like we are giving up. And when you think about the cohort of young people these days that are struggling, I can't look their parents in the eye and say, we're just going to give up. We're just going to give them syringes and hope for the best.
Well, I've seen the injection facility operate in Vancouver. You've seen it in Montreal. Could you describe it for our audience? What exactly happens?
Yeah, look, so it's a place that's clean, sterile, well-run, looks professional, has nurses on staff, and essentially, you know, for a block of time, for specific hours, folks are able to, you know, go in, register, give a little bit of information, and then go into a room using their own substances and inject under the supervision of a nurse who can look out for, you know, them using, you know, unsterile needles or if whether or not they have abscesses, or most importantly, if they suffer an overdose. And if somebody suffers an overdose while on site, they can get immediate medical care. And at the same time, there is a conversation about, you know, hey, look, had you ever thought about getting treatment? Because if you're interested, we can help make that happen. Mm. And so it's designed to be a place where you can minimize the harms associated with injection drug use,
namely,
endocarditis and overdose.
They still have to purchase their drugs, their nickel or dime bags, out in the street from dealers before they actually come into the clinic and it's injected safely into their veins.
Yeah, they do. And what I would say is, you know, safely is probably not the right word, but it's a way of doing it in a safer kind of way and educating folks. I also think there's something to be said for engaging folks in a process of looking out for their own health. And, you know, every time someone walks into one of those facilities, they're getting clean syringes and being told not to share. There's posters and education about HIV and hepatitis C. So although I don't think these facilities are for everyone, namely the 20-year-old substance user who's been only in this for a month, there is a role for those long-term chronic users to say, look, I don't care what you're saying, what you're going to do. I'm not going to get treatment. I don't really feel a need to get well. But in the meantime, I don't want to drop dead of an overdose.
Do appreciate that. Dr. Jeff Reynolds, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Family and Children's Association. About Jeff Sessions' early announcement of a new task force targeting opioid manufacturers, distributors, dealers, and users.
Curtis Lewa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death.
Tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hate.
Well, he was smoking all right, a cigarette, except it looked like he was going to get crushed by a B train, and it caused another day of chaos for a lot of commuters who were depending on that train. But the video and the way this guy slid in and out from underneath this B train has gotten some people to scratch their head and marvel and wonder how it is he was able to basically be unscratched. On the line to discuss it is Dan Rivoli, the transit reporter for New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. Thanks for joining us again here on The Drive Home at 5, Dan.
Curtis, always happy to be here.
Okay, so can you explain to us, this guy is like a character like Rubber Man, you know, like Gumby, how he was able to get under a B train, smoke a cigarette, and not get torn to shreds?
Curtis, I wasn't down there, so it beats me. I mean, this is just a true only in New York story, and I implore your listeners, watch the video, because my description of it will not do it justice. But, right, and you see this video of, it starts off a lot of people kind of looking around. There's a train in the station, and the camera goes, and you see a little hand with a lit cigarette pop up between the train and the platform, and he's kind of like, it's like an indication that he is okay, that he didn't get shredded to pieces by hiding out under the station platform. And then the camera, all of a sudden, it starts with him crawling out from under. He gets back on the platform, and you see the firefighters who responded to the scene. They walk right past him. This is how okay this guy was. He gets up off the train. The firefighters are trying to respond to see what's going on. He walks right by them, and then a strap hanger points him out and says, "Oh, that's the guy who was stuck under the train." And this is at Grand Street. It was on the Uptown track, a little after rush hour, a little after 10 a.m. And the firefighters ask him, "Hey, are you okay?" And you can see he answers by doing a little jig and showing that he's okay. So, like I said, it's a miraculous story because those instances don't always turn out so funny or they don't turn out so well.
Now, he was half in the bag. He had been drinking. He's probably titched or bots. Did they take him for a psychiatric evaluation?
Yes. When they were there, they were able to they got the train back to normal. It might be unclear. I don't know what happened to him. The video cuts out. I'm sorry. Excuse me. I apologize. He was taken to Bellevue Hospital for observation. Yes.
Do we know anything about the guy? You know, is he a local yokel? Is he homeless, destitute? Because, boy, this guy is, he needs to be at the Coney Island Freak Show in the spring when it renews its season.
No, we don't know who he is, but a strap hanger with a good sense to put his cell phone video on and grab the footage. I'm glad he did. He gave us New Yorkers a fascinating video to watch. But no, we don't know what happened of this man after he left Bellevue for his observation.
Now, I'm sure there were a lot of New Yorkers, once again, that were delayed, as they've been delayed on trains for all kinds of reasons of late. Was anyone, like, screaming at the guy, "You should have died, you should have died, I'm late for work again for the ninth time in a row"?
No, the video doesn't indicate if anyone was upset, but I think they were more shocked that this man survived a B train just barreling over him, that he got out completely unscathed, apparently. And I think that is what caught the attention of fellow riders. And the man who took the video, they thought the worst. We here at the Daily News, we interviewed the man who took the footage, and he had said that we all turned our backs, that they couldn't witness this, and it was a miracle that he got out. And I think that's what caught the attention of riders. Though this did disrupt service for about a half hour. They had to reroute the D line. The B train was suspended, so it made a mess. Luckily, service was back up before 11 o'clock, and people were on their way.
Well, you know why, Dan. He probably had the luck of the Chinese with their new year in full effect. It was the year of the dog. We've heard of dogs surviving down on the tracks, cats surviving down on the tracks, and now we have this modern-day human Gumby surviving while a B train rolled right over him.
I don't know how he did it, but he did it. And let me tell you, I got track training. I'm certified to walk on the tracks. I did a training program through the MTA, and they had warned me, don't hide under the tracks. You're supposed to, what they call, you stand where it's safe so that the train passes you. You stand, they call it clearing up, and you stand in a position where the trains can safely pass you. This is what workers do. This is what contractors are trained to do. He took the route where you go under the platform. We were advised not to do that, but he did, and he survived. I don't recommend it, but this man apparently got lucky.
Well, certainly do appreciate that. Dan Rivioli of the New York Daily News. Interesting, he was lighting a cigarette, smoking a cigarette. I can imagine somebody coming up to him and saying, if you keep smoking that cancer stick, you're going to be dead. This is a guy who just survived a B train rolling over him, and he came out without a scratch anywhere from the tip of his nose to the tip of his toes.
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And the drive at 5.
There are so many ways to do it.
On air, online, on the app.
That's unbelievable.
77 WABC.
Switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
57 channels and nothing to watch. So sings Farmer Springsteen. Who gets all of his property tax written off because he claims he's a farmer. Yeah, sure he's a farmer. But that's not why we played that song. We played that song because Bill Ervolino has a column, once again in the Record, talking about his life with his dad, who always seems to have a problem with modern-day technology. So what's your dad's problem now, Bill?
His movies. He's sick of, he played that song. I grew up with six channels, million-dollar movie, the same movie every night for a week, and there was always something on. And now I have to deal with the fact that we have 800 channels, and that he's, like last week, he just had a fit. He just, we got to get rid of everything. He wanted to cancel. We have the Fios thing from Verizon. Cancel everything. And I was like, what are you talking about? The service stinks. I said, I'm downstairs 3 days a week. I have the same service. What's the matter with it? And he says, the problem is that TCM is showing the same movies over and over again, and he can't take it anymore. So for this, we have to, like, cut off all contact with the outside world. No phone, no. I was like, what are you talking about? I want to change everything. And yeah, a lot of people have this problem. I went up, because I remember when he got it. You know, they send you, they give you the package, and it's like $69.99, you know, with a little asterisk next to it. And I looked up at his bill, because I don't pay his bills, and he's paying $235 a month for these two stupid phones that nobody uses, the cable and the internet, which is, you know, ridiculous. But unfortunately, I can't get him to tell me, like, what he wants. I went up there with the list, like 700 channels. I'm reading them to him. He doesn't know what any of them are. And he's like, I like the one with the guys that fix the houses. I was like, Dad, that's on every channel. What are you doing? And he likes reels. And so the woman's supposed to call at 6 o'clock last week, never calls. I call them. And, you know, I mean, I'm not the only, I'm sure people listening to this have been through this. What can we do to lower the bill, right? And so, you know, they have these bundles, they call them. It's like this package, that package. So I was like, you know, can we go down one package? Can we get rid of my phone, landline phone, because I don't use it anyway? Plus, they're giving me a Spanish translator for half price, $7.99. I said, I don't even speak Spanish. What is this doing? I never ordered this. And so anyway, she said, okay, so she tells me the new package, and it's going to say $70. And we're still going to have reels plus Showtime plus HBO. Wonderful. Now, I come back here this weekend. No Showtime, no HBO, the phone is off, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? And now I got to step back to them again and try to figure out. Meanwhile, the guy from Optimum comes today, and he's like, oh, we can give you a really good deal. And I said, you know, I'm very tempted, but I just signed a renewal for 2 years. He's like, oh, well, I'm authorized to buy out your contract. This is what they do. They make your life miserable. They keep charging you more and more. And then another company comes, gives them money, and they don't care. And then 2 years later, they come knocking on the door, and they start all over again. This is what's going on.
Well, I think Bill Ervolino, you're going to have to become like the millennials and hipsters and just cut the box. You know, they don't use the box anymore. They just get their TV, as we would call it, in streaming fashion.
Yeah, what is this Hulu they're watching? I mean, it's like, I don't know what this... Don't you pay for that, too?
No, it's actually for us, it was the hula hoop. Remember, that was the big thing. Our sisters would get the hula hoop and then say, I bet you can't do this, Curtis. Because they were always better with the hula hoop because they moved their hips better.
If you remember the time when you were, wherever you were working at the time, you come in and you talk, oh, what happened on The Sopranos last night? What happened on Seinfeld last night? Nobody watches the same anything. There's so many channels. And everybody complains, there's nothing. And he says, I said, can't you, he's tired of the movies on TCM. He's been watching TCM for like 24 hours a day for the last 28 years. And I said, watch the other movie. Oh, they have new movies. I don't like new movies. I said, well, you've seen all the old movies. They're not going to make new old movies for you. There's only so many old movies that there are. How many, you know, what are you going to do?
But Bill, you mentioned the glory days of TV. The Million Dollar Movie, Channel 9, would start every night. I think it was 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock. And they'd play King Kong 5 nights a week or Godzilla 5 nights a week. So if you missed it one night, your friend said, oh, did you see Godzilla last night? You knew you could catch up to it.
I'm the boy with green hair, I remember. And I had a black and white set, so I never saw what his hair looked. I think the movie was black and white anyway. But I was like, I would watch these movies over and over again. They had the theme from Gone with the Wind playing in the background. And they would show you the same movie every night, the Jolson story, whatever it was. And that was it. I watched Claude Kirshner and Clowney. I watched the little kiddie shows. You know, then I got older. I watched whatever was on, you know, All in the Family and whatever when I was in high school. And everybody was fine.
I know, but Bill...
Now there's like a million channels.
Bill Ervolino was great because the Million Dollar Movie, you felt like you were $1 million, like you were in a theater. You make your own popcorn at the time. You know, it wasn't these imported popcorns at all. You know, it was just traditional popcorn. And you can watch that movie five times in a row from Monday through Friday. And it was like you were watching it for the first time.
I would watch most of them every night. Now, you know what? I have to say, I'm complaining that I lost this HBO, but I have to be honest with you. They have like 49 movies on every day. I can't remember the last time I watched any of them. They're all garbage. And, you know, I like, there's certain, like, other shows, they do good documentaries and things. I like that. But all these movies are just stupid.
Well, let me tell you something. Let me give you a blast of the past. Let me take you back. You remember? You remember as you were sitting there and you were preparing to watch your million-dollar movie, the same movie you had watched 30 times before that, and it was like it couldn't get any better. Oh, there it was.
Those were the days. But he get, you know, it's like if you've dealt with an older, I mean, I know you've had, your parents lived to a decent age, but, you know, he's 91. He gets very obsessed with things. You know, and this is what, and I know whenever something like this happens, I'm going to have to go and deal with this for like a couple of days. You know, he did that thing when he watches that commercial with the pizza, the Domino's pizza.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, I want to go to Domino's. I said, for what? Well, if you drop the pizza, they give you a new one. I said, who cares? Whoever drops the pizza? Whoever drops the pizza, except when you're in college and you just eat it anyway. You don't even go back to the store. But this is how he is, you know. And so when I told him that we had to renew, you know, we had to renew the package in order to get this deal. And he said, what does that mean? I said, well, it's 2 years. He says, 2 years? I'm 91 years old. Anything could happen to me. I could get hit by a bus. I could get sick. I could fall. I said, you're going to fall with a pizza? He said, well, possibly. You know, I don't know.
And he can't get up, you know, and then you need life. You need lifeguard.
Pizza everywhere.
Exactly. But let me tell you something, Bill Orvalino. I want you to keep watching anyway. For those of you who would like to catch up with Bill Orvalino with his many columns, it's northjersey.com. That's northjersey.com. But I'm going to help Bill Orvalino grow hair on top of his head, and it's not from eating supersized Mickey D's fries.